Well, hello and welcome to Main Street on member-supported Prairie Public. I'm Eric Dethridge. It's real nice to have you along today, the day after the primary election day. And last night, North Dakota's first husband and wife legislative team got the chance to advance past their primary wins to this November's election. Kristen Kenner is running for Senate, and her husband, Corey, is running for the House of Representatives in District 15. You'll hear from them in the latest episode of our regional news podcast, Prairie Beat. And later in the show on Prairie Plates, Rick Guion taps into the culinary wonders of the pitchfork fondue out in western North Dakota. Well, North Dakota's largest city will have a new mayor officially on July 6th. That's when State Senator Josh Beauchesne will officially assume his new role as chief executive of North Dakota's largest city. There were a few firsts and potential firsts with this election. We'll talk about that with Mayor-elect Josh Beauchesne. And Josh, welcome. In the interest of full disclosure, we should say that you used to be on our board of directors and an underwriter for Prairie Public as well. That out of the way, a big congratulations to you.
Thanks, Eric. It's good to be with you. And it's a great morning to wake up with all the congratulatory texts and outreach from folks. So certainly excited for Fargo's future.
Okay, so be honest, what time did you go to bed last night?
I ended up being about 3 o'clock by the time I got done reading all the news stories and responding to the text I thought I could spend in the middle of the night. And yeah, so it was a late night, but woke up this morning and ready for a fresh day.
Talk about first. The first that we should talk about is that the mayor of Fargo is now a full-time salaried position. The official salary is $100,000. It used to be half of that. It used to be a part-time position. First of all, what do you make of that, and would you have run if it were not?
Yeah, no, it's great that the city commission put that in the budget and made that a priority, because the reality is our previous three mayors that I knew, including current mayor Tim Mahoney, all worked much more than full-time. And so to compensate at that level is important. And the reality is I don't think I would have been able to run with a part-time position or part-time compensation, knowing it was a full-time job. And I think when we look at elected offices and how we want to make sure that it's accessible for folks of all different income levels and experiences, making sure that those pay ranges are competitive is an important piece of that. And so certainly that played a role into my decision to run, knowing that I'd be able to pay my own bills as part of the work, not just give back to my community, but also, you know, live not have to have a second job, because, you know, certainly the full-time mayor or the position is a full-time position and needs that focus.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, you're a real estate agent to people I know. Are you done with that? Are you going to be dipping your waters part-time into that still? Or what's the status of your life as a real estate agent?
Yeah, so I serve as a real estate agent, but also a broker. So I get to support 140 agents across the state of North Dakota and backup agents in Minnesota. So I'll be slowly transitioning out of that leadership role for the company I work with, but will continue to maintain my real estate license in some capacity so I have the opportunity in the future. But as far as helping people actively buy and sell homes, I've had many conversations with folks who want to work with me, and they're more than happy to work with some of the great agents I work with every day.
All right. Well, another first, a first, Josh, you are the first, I think it's fair to say, millennial mayor of Fargo. And judging from the celebration of the Avalon last night, you saw lots of tatted young arms. Do you feel like this is a passing of the torch? What do you feel as far as a responsibility to that constituency?
Yeah, it's exciting to represent a new generation of leadership for Fargo. You know, Fargo's a growing city. In all honesty, as part of our growth is we've become younger. You know, as other states have gotten older, North Dakota has gotten younger, specifically with the oil boom out west, but then also with the economic development here in the Red River Valley. And so, you know, with the median age of Fargo being 34, I'm 10 years senior that now, but, you know, to represent that demographic of Fargoans and North Dakotans, I'm honored. And, you know, certainly we'll bring a different perspective to how we lead and how we engage the public as a part of the city's operations.
Well, speaking of perspectives, the person that we have to check the final vote tally, and it doesn't officially, I guess, get made till like June 22nd or something like that. But I believe Michelle Turnberg was in second place. Either she or Denise Kolpak would have been the first woman mayor, another first in Fargo, should that have happened. But that did not. And it's been politely contentious as a race, I would say, very North Dakota in a way. But still, Michelle Turnberg and Dave Pepcorn, the commissioner, had a lot of different opinions about fiscal discipline and what to do about the unhoused situation. They would say that, you know, Fargo should get out of the business of helping the unhoused, leave that to the nonprofits. But first of all, have you had a chance to talk to any of your opponents since last night?
Not anyone other than Sekou Sirleaf had reached out, and we were able to engage this morning.
And speaking of Sekou, the Human Rights Commission, would you be in favor of retaining that and having that?
Yeah, I think there needs to be some sort of mechanism, whether it's inside City Hall or outside, to formally engage with our growing diverse community. You know, 20% of Fargo is people of color, and, you know, people of different faiths and different experiences and cultures. So making sure that, again, how we engage the public, whether people consider themselves diverse or we consider them diverse, you know, they bring important perspective to our community, and we need to engage them and find a way to do that effectively.
Well, getting back to Michelle Turnberg and Dave Pepcorn, a lot of billboards, a lot of lawn signs too. What would you say then to their voters, their supporters, about how you would engage with them?
Well, as I said last night at the Avalon, whether you voted for me or didn't vote at all, you know, I plan to be a mayor who listens and leads and delivers. So I've been in electoral politics since 2012. And, you know, while I've been elected many times in my legislative district, there are a lot of people who didn't vote for me that still found me to be someone that they could lean on or they could reach out to. At the end of the day, we're all Fargoans, and people want what's best for their community, for their families, for their neighborhoods. And so I'm willing to listen and work and find ways that we can work together to advance the different priorities that exist out there.
Well, speaking of housing, you being a real estate agent, you're on the front lines when it comes to this, and the group of supporters that you had all throughout the city, millennials. First of all, with first-time home buyers, like what do you tell them now, and how will you engage with them as far as those wanting to buy a home in the economic climate that we're kind of facing right now?
Yeah, it's, you know, it certainly was a big part of the campaign conversation. You know, we want to make sure that folks can lock down in Fargo, can continue to call Fargo home, and housing affordability, whether someone's buying a home or renting their home, is continuing to be more and more challenging. And of course, that's something we see across the country. So I, you know, really want to bring my real estate experience and the stakeholders I know in that space to bring people together to find a Fargo solution to that. And part of that, really, for the city's perspective, is how do we make sure we have planning that is sustainable for our growth, both going south and out, but also infill and building in density, so that we can use existing resources such as the roads and the sewer pipe that's already there to reduce the cost to homeowners or new renters. You know, I've heard a lot, especially from renters. 54% of Fargo are people who rent their home, and there's a lot of people who want to continue to rent their home. They don't have an interest in buying their home. That's certainly something I've heard loud and clear throughout the campaign. But their concern is wanting to make sure they have safe housing. While their rent continues to go up or new fees get added to their monthly bill, they're not seeing that security door getting fixed or the mold that they've addressed with their property manager be addressed. And so, you know, part of one of the first things I'm going to do is create a mayor's council on renters. And we're going to bring property managers, landlords, renters together, and we're going to talk about what is the bar is what we consider safe housing in Fargo, and establish that bar, because there's a lot of great landlords and property managers already doing that work. But we want to make sure that they hear from tenants, they hear those concerns, and we're raising that bar so that everyone can have some safe housing.
If you're just tuning in, you are listening to Main Street on member-supported Prairie Public. I'm Eric Dethridge. We are talking with Fargo Mayor-elect Josh Beauchesne. Downtown Fargo, of course, it's on a lot of people's minds these days. You can't help but see it when you drive into downtown or you walk by. Empty storefronts, restaurants are closing down. There was a letter to the editor from one of the owners of a downtown restaurant last week, and she kind of took to task some of the comments from some of your opponents about the situation downtown, what's to blame, and the unhoused situation. And she was also saying, but then again, Josh Beauchesne, he comes into my restaurant with a group of people. I've seen you at places. Everybody's seen you around downtown. So, you know, the big problems facing the downtown area, housing, crime, the perception of crime anyway, how is you, Mayor-elect Josh Beauchesne, going to tackle all of that?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, we have to make sure that the mayor and the city commission is cheerleading all parts of town, including downtown. And I think, you know, that restaurateur's letter really laid it out that, you know, it doesn't help when we have city leaders talking about how bad certain parts of town are instead of really digging in to help find solutions. So, you know, whether you live in South Fargo, North Fargo, downtown, whether those are places you want to visit or experience or start or grow a business, I want to make sure that all those communities have what they need to be successful. And so as far as downtown specifically, we have to have a lot of conversations, but the experiences in our downtown, you know, are not unique to Fargo. But there is an opportunity to find a Fargo solution. And I think a part of that is really engaging folks. We know when there are events, downtown is full. I mean, even sometimes the days last week when I was going downtown and it was warmer outside, you saw families in Broadway Square, people frequent it. So this idea that people don't go downtown, I think is just untrue. There's a lot of people who haven't experienced downtown, and I'd love to have them do that. But there's also a lot of great things down on the 25th Street and 32nd Avenue corridor that I'd like Fargo folks to experience. And so that's part of what I want to do as mayor, is take some of the things we've learned about how do you build community and events and culture in places like downtown, and how do we find other neighborhoods or community centers of our greater community that would be willing to have an idea about how can we make a great walkable little giant intersection where there's shops and there's things that families can do. And people from downtown will go a couple times a year to experience that because they're going to have some sort of great annual festival that we all support. And so it's really about making sure Fargo continues to be vibrant, that Fargo continues to be a place that everyone can call home, and really making sure that our leaders are doing that in a way that's positive. There's realities. There are challenges that are facing our community. We have to confront those face on. But we do that by working together.
One of the big hot button issues, if you will, for Fargo for a while now, for years and years and years, maybe it still will be for years and years and years, is where are they going to build this convention center? So what are your thoughts now as mayor? I know they're supposed to vote on it June 22nd, maybe. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you know, I'm supportive of this current commission making that decision, and that's coming up, like you said, on June 22nd. But the next commission is going to do the implementation of that decision. So in terms of where it's going to go, you know, we have two great options between Brewhalla and the Civic Center site. But, you know, the current commission is digging into those numbers to make sure that we're not getting an albatross around our neck in terms of something that is going to cost taxpayers more than what they expected when they voted to support creating a convention center. And so I appreciate the due diligence and look forward to seeing that data as it comes out, specifically the apples-to-apples comparison between the two sites. Both have a lot to offer our community. And, you know, that may sound like a political answer and not picking one, and that's what a lot of people wanted me to do. I also know that what I found, so I also serve on the Fargo-Moorhead Science Museum Board, joined that late last year. And one thing that's happened for us is we had a site identified. We were working with a developer who was very supportive. They were looking at some other options. And now we've had many other developers come forward and say, hey, if we don't get the convention center, would you consider coming here? And so there's conversations about a performing arts center and other community facilities that, again, help make Fargo great. And so, you know, regardless of what gets picked for the convention center, I think one of those other sites, and then of course the other seven sites that didn't make it to the final two, are going to continue to compete for ideas of how do we continue to invest in Fargo and make sure that there's opportunities for people to engage throughout our community.
You're going to engage with a new city commission, some new members, some ones are still carrying over. And one of them certainly, along with the one that is stepping down because of term limits, has touted fiscal responsibility as being a priority for them. How will you manage fiscal responsibility as mayor?
Yeah, you know, throughout the campaign, I've said that one of my priority goals with the budget is, first of all, we set a budget number up front and we work backwards from there. So I've already planted a flag saying that I would like to see a budget that grows no greater than 1% over last year. And then we work backwards. We work with the department leaders, the city manager, the finance director to say, how do we make this work? Now, of course, there's realities in that because you have inflation as it relates to, you know, our employees, our great Fargo, Team Fargo, their health insurance costs that come with that. And of course, things just cost more to operate. So those are factors that are going to play into that. But one thing I've learned as I've visited with department leaders over the last several months is I think there's opportunities for more collaboration. There's opportunities to find efficiencies, and whether it's what technology is being used across departments, how do we make decisions, maybe putting a pause on some of our capital projects that for the city specifically. so that we can really get our bearings straight and really look at what that budgeting process looks like. What I'm excited about, with a number of people who ran for commission, but the two that are coming on the commission is both of them come with local government experience. Chad Peterson from the county, Nikki Gullickson from the school board, both of them have dug into local budgets. They understand the role that property taxes pay, not only in how we fund the core services we have in our community, but the pain that people feel and express, so that we're going to come in really, I think, bright-eyed and really work together as a team, along with the current commissioners, Michelle Turnberg and John Strand, to make sure we have a budget that meets Fargo's needs while also not putting too much on taxpayers.
And you are listening to member-supported Prairie Public on this Wednesday. I'm Eric Dethridge. If you are just joining us, we are chatting with freshly elected mayor of Fargo, Josh Beauchesne, who won last night with, at last check, about 47% of the vote in a crowded field of five. And, we have a statewide audience here at Prairie Public, so a lot of people from all over North Dakota are listening, and some might be thinking, why do I care about Fargo? What's kind of in it for me? Why should I care? So you're from Minot originally. You served in the legislature for a number of years, since 2012. Why should people in North Dakota, Beulah, North Dakota, anywhere in North Dakota, care about what happens in Fargo?
Quite honestly, for me, it's not only about them caring about Fargo, but Fargo caring about them. That is one of the things I've talked about throughout the campaign. As much as people wanted to say that my state-level experience may not prepare me well for city-level experience, it's that I understand what's happening throughout the state. I understand that when Fargo needed more money for transit because we lost some federal funds due to our growth, we found out that Minot, Grand Forks, and Bismarck all have the same needs. So we got the four cities together. We went to the legislature. We were able to receive $2 million over the four communities to provide transit dollars. And also now having a long conversation in this interim about finding sustainable long-term funding for those four communities. When Fargo shows up to Bismarck, I think we need to always do it with the best interest of our neighbors, regardless if that is someone right in our backyard as a neighbor or someone across in the northwest corner of the state. But there are opportunities for us to collaborate with those communities to make sure Fargo is successful. An example I'll talk about that is our chamber, both our chamber and North Dakota State University, independent of one another and collaboratively, do what they call Bakken West tours. They take business leaders and students out to Western North Dakota to experience, to find out about jobs and opportunities and culture and the economies out there. And then on the flip side, we ask those communities to come to Fargo to learn about this. And it's creating some great opportunities for some cross-pollination for how businesses can work together and how we can make sure we support communities throughout the state.
Yeah, a little more east-west collaboration than the trains that come through downtown Fargo from
exactly.
The Bakken. Right. Well, speaking of statewide, Mayor Mahoney has been in office for, 12 years? Long, long stretch there. But some have seen you, some see you as a hope for the Democratic Party in North Dakota, which I don't have to tell you, has had lots of struggles since the 90s and early aughts when there was a dominance, at least in Congress. What about your political ambitions? The cynical person might say, is this a springboard, a stepping stone for you?
Yeah, I certainly heard that a lot through the campaign. And first and foremost, the mayor position and the city commission are nonpartisan races. But I knew when I got in the race, I also didn't have to hide who I was. People knew the leader I was, whether it was as a Democratic leader or just a legislative leader, that I'd be bringing that experience to City Hall. And as far as, my future ambitions, I didn't think I'd be sitting in the mayor's office. I didn't think I'd be serving the state legislature when I ran in 2012. Part of the story I shared last night with everyone, my parents were there. They came down from Minot to be a part of last night, is I come from a hardworking family, a nurse and a construction laborer who were young parents who had three boys and worked their tails off, taught us strong work ethic. But there's not a political bone in any of their bodies. I don't come from a family that sat around at the dinner table talking about policy or politics. It's something I grew into through the community leadership I had here in Fargo. And so that's what drives who I am, not the political party that's next to my name. I certainly align with a lot of those values. But, as far as the future of the Democratic Party in North Dakota, we're seeing not only, I think, growth in who's stepping up and pragmatic, practical leaders within the Democratic Party, but we even saw last night a rejection of the extremism within the Republican Party. Right? Not the experience that our neighbors to the South and South Dakota have had the last couple cycles, right? In our last couple cycles here, North Dakotans have said they want moderate leaders. So when they're, especially in a Republican primary, deciding between someone who's more conservative and someone who's more moderate, almost universally, they're selecting the moderate people.
Yeah, I think Rockport said the normies had a good night last night.
Yes, yep. And that means, you know, that's, again, you know, part of the super minority in the Democratic Party. We've also said that we've been a part of the ruling majority because we still fund education between 60% and 70% of the cost of per kid in every school district. The roads we've built, the economic development that's happened throughout the state, we've tried as hard as we can to focus on the core issues. And when those extreme ideas, whether it's on the right, and it's not the left here in North Dakota, but in other states it's on the left, when those ideas come forward and those bills become distractions, we're not able to do the core things we need to do within that 80-day period. So, hats off to the legislators that got through the primaries last night. They still have work ahead of them to get to a general. But we also know that voters told us they want people who are focused on the real issues, regardless of your political party.
I think it's a national thing, too. I think it's loud and clear. People want the parties to work together and find solutions and not be so tribal about their politics.
Yeah. I've one of the ahas I've had over the campaign is, you know, I'm 44. So I came up and paying attention to the world around me in the 90s and 2000s. But back then, compromise was how things got done, right? The Senate always got to 60 votes because someone gave a little to get a little. And now everyone just digs in, and it's about what team you're in. And we talk about how many divided, you know, we don't even have divided legislatures anymore. I think Minnesota is one of the last of a handful. And instead of being able to find ways to work together, we see extremism kind of growing. And hopefully we'll continue to see a rejection of that from voters. But the important part, especially for those middle of the road voters, those independent voters, is you got to show up. You got to cast your ballot because you're the real decision makers.
Okay, so Senator and Mayor-elect Beauchesne, we save the perhaps the best first for last. You are the first openly gay mayor of Fargo, North Dakota, and I was talking to organizers of Pride at Capitol Pride in Bismarck yesterday. They could barely contain their excitement about the possibility. I'm sure that you've heard lots of that. How does that feel? Do you feel like you're representing something, that you're helping people be seen and opening up minds to possibilities? How do you see all this with this moment?
Yeah, you know, first and foremost, representation matters, especially in all levels of our community, whether it's business leaders, whether it's in the military, whether it's in athletics, but even in elected office. And so, I'm proud to wear that banner and to be a visible representation of, it doesn't matter who you love, how you identify, what your religion is. There are places for you to lead as long as you focus on the core issues and listen to the voters to make sure you're representing them well. So I've done that over the last since I've served in the legislature beginning in 2012. And a lot of people asked throughout the campaign, well, has the quote unquote gay issue or has the gay thing become an issue? And it really hasn't, you know. And I think a lot of that shows that I think we've seen a progression in our local community, but maybe even throughout the state, of rejection of some of that identity politics. But also recognizing that if people are willing to wake up every day, work hard, there is a place for you here in Fargo and in North Dakota. And we want to make sure we support you and lift you up and you help make our community great.
Well, happy Pride, Mayor-elect. And I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your very busy schedule today, the day after you won the election for mayor of North Dakota's largest city, Fargo. You will be sworn in on July 6th. Congrats. Thanks again.
Thanks. The real work begins now.
Now, you're hearing Chapel Roan in the background. Couldn't help myself. If you fish around social media enough today, you will see a clip of Mayor-elect Beauchesne and a duet partner belting out Pink Pony Club at Dempsey's in downtown Fargo last night. Coming up, could North Dakota's legislature feature a husband and wife team? Well, they are one step closer to getting to that goal. You'll hear from the Kenners on our news podcast, Prairie Beat. Henrik Eon talks about a Swiss tradition adopted for cowboys out in Medora, the pitchfork fondue. Stick around, but first, this news. Support for Prairie Public is provided by Livewire, offering audio, video, lighting, staging, and scenery services for conferences, meetings, and live events, serving the Prairie region and clients nationwide. More at livewirenow.com. and by Planned Parenthood, offering health education for teens and workshops for parents on topics including health, relationships, and growing up. More at ppncs.org. And you are listening to Member Supported Prairie Public. I'm Eric Dethridge. Welcome back to Main Street. A little bit later in the show, it was a historical election night in more ways than one. In the Devil's Lake area, a husband and wife team are poised to become the first married couple in the North Dakota legislature. Danielle and I will have details on that in this week's Prairie Beat. But first, let's bring a cowboy-sized hearty appetite to Western North Dakota.
Welcome to another edition of Prairie Plates here on Main Street. I'm Rick Yeon. Prairie Plates is served weekly, and we find special guests around the state and region to talk about cuisine and what's going on food-wise in the region. And today we have Brock White on, who is the marketing director of the Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation. We're going to be talking about the North Dakota legendary pitchfork fondue, which a lot of folks that go to Medora experience, and it's just a delicious way to experience Medora. Brock, welcome to Prairie Plates.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for coming in. And before we talk about the pitchfork fondue, I do want to mention an event happening tomorrow in Fargo at Brewhalla, which is put on by the North Dakota Beef Commission and the North Dakota Barley Council. It's a beef and beer event at Brewhalla in the afternoon with a Food Network chef, Justin Warner. They're bringing him in to do some cooking demos and beer pairings at Brewhalla. And if you would like to attend the event, contact the North Dakota Beef Commission for more information. Their website is ndbeef.org. Brock, tell us about yourself and your role at the Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation.
Hey, you bet, Rick. So thank you. So my name is Brock White. I'm the marketing director here for the Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation. Been with the foundation now since the beginning of the year, but born and raised, I'm a Southwest North Dakota kid my entire life. I grew up in Bowman, just down the road from Medora. I've been coming to the musical and all the things here my entire life and came with my family. Now I bring my kids here, and it's part of tradition like we all do. And so just glad to be part of this. I live over in South Hart by Dickinson. So like I said, I've been a Southwest ND kid my entire life and just glad to be on the team now helping the foundation further our mission here.
My family's from Southwestern North Dakota, Regent, Hedinger County. And so that's kind of fun to talk to someone from out there. But Brock, let's get into the meat of it or the beef of it. Tell us about the pitchfork fondue. Like I said, it's North Dakota legendary. People hear about it. Describe the pitchfork fondue for our listeners.
That's a great question, Rick. And I'll paint the visual if I can, because it's a visually appealing. It's almost more of a spectacle than a dinner at times, even though the food is amazing, right? But when you walk into the pitchfork fondue, it's an outdoor setting up on the Jaden Terrace right by the Medora Musical. So it overlooks the Badlands. It's the best dinner with a view you'll ever get in your life, in my opinion. And when you walk in, you're going to walk right by four giant vats of boiling oil where our cowboy cooks load up New York strip steaks, a big 12-ounce strip steak, put it on pitchforks, and they dunk it and boil it in the oil. And you take it off, and then you walk through a buffet line, and we have, you know, all the things you'd love with a steak dinner: baked beans, baked potatoes, garlic toast, all those great things, right? Brownies, fresh salads, and lemonade and coffee. But the smell overtakes the area. The food is delicious. And it's this incredible sensory overload of the boiling steaks and the smells and the views and live music playing while you eat your supper. And then you get to walk on over and enjoy the Medora Musical. Have some popcorn, have a soda, enjoy the greatest show in the West. So really for us, we talk about it as kind of the best combo in the West. You can't miss it. You got to do them both together, in my opinion. But really the pitchfork steak fondue is just this over-the-top way to enjoy a steak dinner right in the Badlands the way they would have done it back in the day.
How many steaks can you fit on a pitchfork?
I'm going to say each pitchfork probably holds right about, well, that's a good question. I think about eight is what it is, roughly, eight or so. And they put about two or three pitchfork full loads into each vat. To give you some context, Rick, I think last year We did about 41 or 42,000 Pitchfork Steak Fondue dinners last year up at the Butte. So pretty busy year, a lot of steaks going through. I think this year so far we've done close to, boy, how many is it? Probably almost 5,000 already this year. So and we were only 1 week into the musical. So a lot of interest, a lot of activity. And really, like we always say, you got to pair them together because it's a great combination, a 1-2 punch of dinner and a show.
Wow, that is an extraordinary amount of steaks.
I know we've talked about, like, are we probably on the short list for like some kind of world record for the most steaks served in the summer or steaks served in the month? And I think we're going to look into that down the road. But man, we got to be close because that is a lot of strip steak going out the door. And we're in beef country, you know, so there's a lot of high standards we're held up to out here. People know a good steak. You can't fool them around here. So if we get that kind of repeat business, it must be something's working, right?
You are in cattle country, and it's one of the most beautiful parts of North Dakota, that's for sure. And these are pretty large steaks. I saw on your website they're 12 ounces or so.
Yeah, 12-ounce New York strip steak is what it is, yeah. So definitely a hearty serving, you know. Even if I'm the kind of guy that likes a 16-ounce ribeye once in a while, 12-ounce definitely fits the bill. Plus the buffet is crazy. I mean, the baked beans are, you know, kind of cowboy styles. They have that molasses brown sugar, really good flavor to them. And there's huge baked potatoes and all the extra fixings you could think of. And, you know, for your sweet tooth for dessert, you can have brownies or a cinnamon sugar donut. And so really a little bit of everything. And even the cool thing is, even for the kids that might not want a steak, we do for kids 12 and under all summer long with a paying adult. They can have a free hot dog meal too. So we make sure everyone's taken care of at the Pitchfork Steak Fondue.
We're having a fun discussion today with Brock White, who is the marketing director of the Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation, about the North Dakota legendary Pitchfork Fondue. You know, this event seems to be popular. Obviously, there's some reasons to keep doing it, right, Brock?
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, it's a little bit tradition, a little bit of rite of passage, right? You know, I think it's one of those things that if you're a traveler coming from near or far, you know, your friends have told you probably word of mouth about Medora and the National Park and the musical, and they probably told you about the fondue and they tell you you have to do it. I mean, I just, walking around the Butte last week when we had opening week, talking to couples from far and wide, from California and Idaho and Wyoming and everywhere, they're all telling me that, yeah, we talked to our friends that came out here a couple of years ago, and they said you have to do the fondue and do the musical. And so I think for us, it's tradition. It's a spectacle. It's an amazing, beautiful view. And I think anytime, you know, you can bring families together to sit down at the picnic tables and meet each other and make new friends and make new connections, that's what makes North Dakota so great, what makes us so great. And we really look at the Pitchfork Steak Fondue as one of those, just, I think it's a North Dakota icon at this point. It's one of those bucket list things you have to do if you're in North Dakota.
I think one big thing about food, and one of the reasons why I do this segment, is exactly what you just talked about, is the community aspect of it. Meeting new people. You're going to meet some great people in Western North Dakota, some very friendly people. And it sounds like I need to make a trip out to Medora this year to try out the Pitchfork Fondue.
I think you do, Rick. And you mentioned the meeting the people. And the cool thing is, you know, we're the foundation here. We're in 40 years of existence now. The musical's in its 61st year. We've got employees here that have been with us for 30, 20 years. I mean, long tenured people here. So when you're talking to folks at the Fondue, like our head of our hospitality and lodging, Lupchuk, you know, he'll talk about some of the memories and things that have changed. You get to know him and get to know the people behind the scenes here. And there's just so many cool stories and great people and great hospitality. And it does, it brings us together. It's a common bond. We all bond over food. We have our memories. We, you know, you and I could probably sit here and talk about the places we love the most, our favorite, you know, dive hole in the wall steakhouses and stuff. So it's a cool thing that brings us together, and it's a great way to bond and connect.
This event has been going on for a while now, probably decades, right?
Yeah, I think the permanent home was built in the early 90s at the Jaden Terrace up on the Butte up there. There was some different locations throughout the years. They kind of got it going, but the terrace has definitely been around since the early 90s, I think close to when the renovation was done for the amphitheater at the same time, right about there. So, yeah, we're talking, it's a decades-long tradition now, and you know, I mentioned those family memories, right? That's part of my draw to Medora and why I love the area so much is I can go back to when my mom and grandma brought me up here. Now I bring my kids here, and it's those things you pass down, and it's part of family traditions and memories, which is, makes the connection to the area so special for so many people.
How do interested folks make a reservation to get the Pitchfork Fondue, or do they just give you a call online, or do they just show up?
There's a few ways you can do it. We'll take you any way you want to come, right? So Medora.com is your best bet to plan ahead. Head to Medora.com and you can book your tickets. We do have some evenings where we're pairing the Pitchfork Steak Fondue and the musical together. I know you mentioned, Rick, the Beef Commission event coming up. They're going to be here on the 20th of June as part of our Farming and Ranching Heritage Night at the musical. And we're celebrating all the farmers and ranchers of the regions. And one of those nights, that 20th, we have that bundle package on the Steak Fondue and the musical. But anytime you want to book it, Medora.com, the musical and the fondue run 6 nights a week, Tuesday through Sunday. I apologize, at 5:30 every night for the fondue, 7:30 for the musical. Or you can call 1-800-MEDORA-1 or stop at the Ticket Junction office here in town or any box office we have throughout the community.
That sounds good. And we're going to switch gears a little bit here to talk about a lot of events coming up in Medora. A big one with the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library opening. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's exciting, Rick. You know, July 4th, 2026, the library is going to open up on America's 250th birthday. And we're just so excited. It's going to be a great opportunity for us to kind of show the world what makes Medora so special and the Badlands so special, why Theodore Roosevelt fell in love with this place, why Harold Schaefer fell in love with this place, right? So looking forward to that event. July 2nd through the 5th, we're hosting an America 250 Festival. So you talk about food, we're going to have food trucks in town. I think about 18 different food vendors are coming to set up at Chimney Park along with live entertainment. We'll have areas downtown of live entertainment and food vendors. So July 2nd through the 5th is part of the library's grand opening week, a big, big festival birthday party to celebrate America and enjoy the moment and really just welcome a lot of new visitors to the area and show them what makes Medora and the Badlands so special.
Yeah, special, I think, it is the right word. And for Medora to host an event like that, I think is really extraordinary and special for the whole state of North Dakota.
Yeah, I sometimes joke with my friends and family. Yeah, I know that I work here and I drink the Kool-Aid, but beyond that, I'm a North Dakota resident first and foremost, right? I grew up in Bowman. I lived in the southwest corner my entire life, and opportunities like this don't come our way very often. And so for all of us to put our shoulder behind the wheel, if you will, and take advantage or take a advantage of the moment here, we're looking forward to it. And I think really it's a great time to, like you said, show the world what makes us so special and bring everyone out here and showcase us in a great light. And just really excited for some people to get their eyeballs on Medora and the Badlands for the first time and kind of understand why the story is what it is and why the library belongs here too. I think it's a great combination with the national park and all that we offer with the musical and kind of being a whole triple threat, if you will, and getting people here, they're just going to fall in love and it's going to be fantastic.
Brock White with the Theodore Roosevelt Medora Foundation. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a great discussion about the Pitchfork Fondue and the goings on in Medora this summer. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it.
This has been another edition of Prairie Plates here on Main Street. I'm Rick Guillen. We'll talk to you next week.
Well, hello, I'm Eric Etheridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. Welcome back to Prairie Beat,
our weekly news podcast from us here at Prairie Public. Well, Danielle, every week we sit down and chat about some news headlines. This week we are going to break down the main news of the day, the stories that are contributing to a lot of us dragging our feet a little bit this morning after being up so late last night. I'm not sure how many times that it's happened that severe weather has swept the entire state at the same time as it did on Election Day, but that is exactly what happened in North Dakota last night.
Yes, and you know, we in the newsroom absolutely are always keeping tabs on politics in the state. This being a midterm election year is certainly no exception, so we've been monitoring those races for months now, but I'm not sure if you could call it serendipity or bad luck or whatever that we also happened to have bad weather at the same time, but those stars certainly did align last night. Dave, Todd, and myself were live blogging as the election results came in, and I was doing so from my kitchen. Because of the weather, I also had some storm chasers and weather forecasters up on my TV in my living room, so just so I could keep an eye on it while all those votes were being tallied. It was an active night on all fronts.
Oh, yeah. I definitely woke up when the storms arrived in my backyard. I mean, I swear it lasted about 10 minutes, but it woke me up enough to be able to look at some of the results, some of your live blogging, and check it out as they came in.
Yeah, I slept through the storm myself, and honestly, I think I needed the few extra minutes. I'm tired.
Yeah, I can tell. At least you're over your cold, so no frog sound effects this time, Danielle. Sorry. Well, let's get into it then. We've been talking all day about the different races and contests, statewide and local. I had the chance, if you were listening on the Main Street broadcast earlier, to talk with Fargo's new mayor-elect Josh Beauchesne, which has had a lot of attention not just locally but statewide. Even cross-border states, too. Voters in North Dakota approved Measure 1, which that requires any constitutional amendment measures to be limited to just one subject. That was very interesting. And also in Fargo, the infrastructure sales tax was extended. But Danielle, as I understand, you want to talk a little bit today about something really unique, a husband and wife running for the legislature together in the same district, District 15. Well, I hope that would be the same district, right?
Yes, yes. So, okay, full disclosure, I grew up in Devil's Lake, and that is where District 15 is located. And I do know Corey and Kristen Kenner from just growing up in town there. It's a small town. I went to school with their kids. And I was joking with them this morning, you know, just from knowing their son, Philip, especially. I've always known that they're a very politically interested and invested family. So when I saw that they were running for the legislature this year, it wasn't really surprising to me. It seems like a natural fit for them, really. But I asked them both, why are they doing that now?
We had always been interested in politics, but, you know, both of our jobs were really not conducive to being able to do something like this. You know, Kristen ran her own dental practice, and I was vice president at the college.
I just felt that I wasn't having a purpose-driven life anymore. I mean, I was used to being with people all the time. I was used to solving problems. That was my life, and I always worked really hard, and suddenly I wasn't working hard on the things that I really felt that mattered, and I didn't want to clean out any more drawers or closets. I just need to give back and be a public servant again.
The Kenners are running as Republicans in District 15. Both Kristen and Judy Estenson ran against incumbent Kent Weston for his Senate seat, and Corey ran as one of three Republicans for the district's two House of Representatives seats. Corey and incumbent Kathy Freilich were the top two vote-getters ahead of Donna Henderson in the House primary, so they will meet Democratic opponents in that race in November. And Kristen emerged as the victor in that Senate race, edging out Kent Weston by a very thin margin of only 41 votes.
It was really, really close. And I certainly hope I'm going to be able to represent the people that voted for him. And I want to have dinner with him and his wife and get to know how he thinks and what's important to him and how he was representing the people for those people that didn't vote for me.
Yeah, it's incredible how these races can come down to just a handful of votes.
Yeah, lots of races across the state were very close indeed. And there are no current Democratic MPL candidates for Senate in District 15, so Kristen will be running now unopposed.
All right, so the wife of the husband and wife team is a definite shoo-in, and the husband didn't have too bad of a chance either. So, yeah, obviously many people choose partners in life, and there are things we like doing with our spouses. Running for office together is not something you hear many married couples doing or even talking about doing. We've already established the Kenners to be a very politically interested and motivated family. Now, Danielle, how did they decide who would run for which chamber?
Yeah, I asked them about that, and they both said they took the personality traits that they each have and applied them to each chamber, and then they flipped them.
Traditionally, the Senate is considered a little more sedate, maybe, and a little slower moving. My wife, you know my wife, I think.
Yeah.
And she's far from sedate. Okay, so she's, you know, pretty animated and talkative.
And I always think about Kent Conrad talking about when I was there in Washington, D.C., talking to him. And he said, well, Kristen, you know, the Senate and the House are two different things, you know. It's like a teacup. And he said, the cup is the House. It's hot. It's taking the heat. It's volatile. And then he goes, that the saucer of it is the Senate. They've let the heat dissipate out, and you stop and you figure things out. And he goes, you need both in our country. And I always remember him saying that. And I thought, I think I need to be the saucer.
I also asked them, as a husband and wife team, I mean, I think of things, for instance, like my husband and I like to do together, and also things we definitely prefer to do apart. Are there advantages or disadvantages to this sort of endeavor, both campaigning and legislating together?
I tell you, it was a real advantage, you know, because we just traveled together. And when we placed yard signs or when we knocked on doors or hung door signs and whatever up, we traveled all over the district together. And so it wasn't lonely. Let's put it that way. It was good.
Well, I think probably one disadvantage might be if we don't agree on a bill. But I mean, that's just life being married. I mean, you always have things that you don't agree on 100% of the time. And it probably, he might be standing one way and I'm thinking the other way. I think that would be the greatest one, that you might be ticked off for a little while, but I think you'll just get through it.
They both told me that while they were traveling through the district, they were surprised to find many constituents who either they said they didn't know who their representatives were in the legislature, or they felt like they were just underrepresented, people that said who they had reached out to their representation but felt ignored. And I also asked them about what these voters were looking for in their representation. What were the issues that were most important to them?
A lot of people were really, really concerned about infrastructure, roads, and we found that out too as we drove around the district. Oh my gosh, some of the roads were really, really tough. Water issues are always a big issue. I mean, they've been a big issue forever. And tourism, one of the things about tourism, they didn't seem to, the people that talked to us that are involved in that industry, they said they just couldn't get responses from legislators up north, especially.
The top issue that I heard was property taxes. Everyone is up in arms of property taxes. And why are they having to pay so many, such high property taxes? And there's got to be a way to get it down. And they were grateful, you know, for getting their $1,600 back this year. But I mean, they want more.
Kristen said she also heard on the campaign trail about the shortage of mental health providers and counselors in the state, and how licensing requirements not allowing reciprocity is limiting residents being able to get those services that they need for mental health and addiction counseling. So she said she was very interested in learning more about that and finding out what there can be done to address that.
And the candidates are both Republicans, right?
Yeah, yes,
so
yeah.
It's not like James Carville and Marley Matlin, where they sit at the dinner table in they always said they didn't sit at the table and talk about politics, but it's very interesting. This is one of those examples of, if you're going to talk about politics, then maybe put your money where your mouth is and do something about it.
So
that's
so
cool. Yeah. Well, hopefully the Kenners and all the other politicians running in the races have a day or two to relax a bit before hitting the ground running again for those November general elections. Those will be here before we know it, and we will once again be ready to watch those races and bring those results when the time comes. Aside from weather and politics, Danielle, were there any other stories of note this week?
It was funny because they came into town, and next thing you know, my phone's ringing at my desk, and they said, they're in town to make two movies, and they need people, and you're it.
Well, there was one. If you have a chance, find Todd McDonald's report he did this week about May Pang. She had a two-day exhibit this week in Fargo called The Lost Weekend, about a look into an 18-month period in the life of John Lennon. May Pang was a personal assistant to John Lennon and Yoko Ono, among other things.
Yeah, you'll definitely want to check out that incredible story. Todd got the long end of the straw and got to do it, not me. But it's really, really cool. It's a big slice of Beatles history there for you. So thanks for all that and all the live blogging, Danielle.
You bet. Be sure to tune in to Prairie Public for more news, or check us out online at news.prairiepublic.org.
All right, that'll do it for us this week on Prairie Beat. I'm Eric Dethridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We'll see you on the beat next week.
Right, that is it for this Wednesday edition of Main Street. I'm Eric Dethridge. The pleasure has been all mine. Thank you for joining me. I'll be back with you tomorrow, and on the show we'll celebrate 10 years of Fargo's Community Cafe Heart and Soul. They have kind of a pay what you can, pay it forward system of feeding hungry people in Fargo. We'll talk to Leola Dahl, Heart and Soul's founder and executive director. Plus, we'll have a spotlight on Bismarck Pride, and you'll hear a conversation with singer-songwriter Mason Jennings. Hope you'll join me for that tomorrow. In the meantime, have a great rest of your day.